right, we're back. One of these years, I'm going to go ahead and just get courageous, and we'll just blow out that break and just keep talking, because there's real good stuff that happens in that 6 to 7 minutes. These guys all let their guard down. They do away with, they dispense with formality, and they just let it rip. Now they're all tightening up their ties and getting themselves back together now.
For those who are wearing ties, Pastor Baker.
We are right in the middle of our Bible study roundtable. We're considering a question here today. Has science eclipsed religion? And I think we've hit a bit of a snag here, because all four of these gentlemen, listen, Jim, see, they're just going on, they're just crazy. All four of these gentlemen are very comfortable in their theology. They're very comfortable in their faith. They are not anti-science. They just feel that if they cannot reconcile the scientific issue with the faith issue takes precedence. They're comfortable with that, and they don't lose any sleep. Did I summarize that pretty well?
I don't know.
No.
No, I don't think so.
No?
Mm-hmm.
I think I summarized it excellently.
Okay.
So what was wrong with it?
The thing about if I cannot reconcile a scientific issue and a faith issue, then the faith issue takes precedence. That's not true.
That's not true? How is that not true?
Well, then that fails science. If you cannot resolve the issue, then you look at more science.
Well, you got a guy who says it took 65 million years for the Earth to evolve, and then we got you, who you think it took place in 6 days. There's a disagreement. They don't reconcile. You believe in 6 days, and we're done. Isn't that pretty much it?
No, you got to keep looking at the science. I mean, sure, that's the basis of what I believe the origin of the Earth is. And see, that's the issue, I think. Everybody believes something concerning the origin of the Earth and the origin of life, because there is no way scientifically to prove what the origin of life or the origin of the Earth is, because the basis of science is not a body of knowledge, but the basis of science is a method, and you cannot reproduce that.
See, that's where I guess that's where the rub is, because I've got some magazines laying back on my desk right now. I play around with astronomy. I'm kind of an amateur astronomer. And I get Astronomy Magazine or Sky and Telescope, and they're not saying maybe or could have been. The articles in there are written as if these things, which you suggest are conjecture, are fact,
mm-hmm.
all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So a person who is not as confident as you gentlemen are, who is wrestling with what seems to be science versus religion, struggling with that, with the added burden of, you know, if I'm inclined to go with religion, then I'm going to have to put up with some abuse, maybe some ridicule from people who can't believe that I've gone, you know, off to the mythological end. There are people, gentlemen, who are actually struggling with this. You're aware of that, are you not?
Mm-hmm.
Tom?
Yeah, well, first of all, the first scientist was an astronomer, as you probably know, Richard Johannes Kepler. In 1571, and he didn't have any problem doing astronomy and also believing in 6-day, 24-hour creation. But there's another point.
So we've come a long way since then, Tom.
I know, but he would probably be writing articles in the magazine that I get is called, and Dr. Weiss should probably, Creation Research Society. I've gotten this since 1967. I got the first issue. I just so happened to be on the campus in Ann Arbor where one of the editors began the publication. I would say that of the six articles, I cannot understand four of them each time because they are so scientific and they use words that I'm not trained in. But they are meant for scientists, and they use science to help make the point of what we believe theologically. The point that they're making is there is no evidence that the world is more than 4,000 years old from a scientific point of view. That's what they say. And they'll stretch it like Dr. Klotz believed up to 18,000 years. Mm-hmm. So you have a stretch there, but it's nothing like millions of years. There are periodicals out there written for folks like yourself who want to look at from a scientific point of view also. It's just that I'm not trained in that, and the only one here would be Dr. Weiss. But that's the point we would want to make. We can, for example, I'll make this other point, is creationists have a hard time now being invited onto campuses to debate evolutionists. And the reason for
it's
that
because they're
is,
witch doctors.
No, because at the end, and I don't care what campus they go to, but at the end, they vote as to which one did the better debate, and the creationists always win hands down from a scientific point of view. And they're complaining that evolutionists aren't allowing them to come on campus because scientifically, creationists have better arguments. It's just that I'm not trained in those. So there is something that Christians are doing out there.
Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you want to jump into the conversation, we've got some callers standing by, including James, who's been holding on since the last hour. Hi, James. What's your question?
Good morning, Brother Chuck.
Good morning.
I have one question, but it has an A and B side, and I'd like to address the A side to Dr. Weiss. Does the church make a distinction between the uses of science for good or for evil? And the reason why I ask that, when you talk about something like stem cell research, you'd hear the argument that there would be some good that would come out of that research. Does the church make a distinction that says that because it's stem cell research that it's wrong, or does it make a distinction between the good and evil uses of it?
Okay.
And my B side is directed to my pastor teacher, Pastor Spomer. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verses 13 through 15, is it an ingratitude for the people who are delivered by wisdom to not remember the wisdom of the poor man?
Got okay. The question? All right.
Okay.
Bob, why don't you go first?
Oh, thanks, James. Yeah. From the standpoint of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we... based on our teachings in terms of Christ, the Christology that we teach, that the killing or the destruction of an embryonic human being is tantamount to murder, and therefore the church would not support that. So therefore any good that may come from the use of what are called the I call them homeless children, frozen in minus 326 degrees of liquid nitrogen, 400,000 of them. Any good that would come from thawing them out and using them to produce pharmaceutical agents that may help someone in Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or other
there
neurological disorders.
You religious people standing in the way of progress. Don't you know
say,
there are people with diseases who need these developments?
Is there a cobweb? I'm hearing something in here. Oh, we would say that this, of course, is based on not helping, not supporting, and not befriending our neighbor, which is the embryo. Now, on the other side of adult stem cells, which are located, for example, we would say skin cells, any kind of liver cell, bone marrow cells, umbilical cord cells, which are used quite frequently right now to help treat various blood stages of leukemias, we would say that would be fine because therein it is a single cell. It's not a human being. It's much like a skin cell. We would say that any good that would come out of the use of that, even though a skin cell or a bone marrow cell may have to be destroyed, we would say that would be meet, right, and salutary. So from our perspective, back to the law-gospel paradigm that Pastor Baker uses, we clearly would not be in support of embryonic stem cell research, but certainly adult stem cell research.
Pastor Spomer, question B.
Question B, the wisdom of that poor wise man, the poor man in the city who counseled with wisdom and saved the city, and then as soon as the city was saved, the people forgot his wisdom and did not thank him. It is a typical response of the world and even really all of us, in that wisdom is not long remembered, and the wisdom, even though it can give us a great deal of aid in this world, is not something which is going to permanently overcome the problems of sin and death. Wisdom does not do that. The personification of wisdom in Jesus Christ, the wisdom of God, who bears the sin of the world, and again, Good Friday, goes to the cross and pays for and answers for the sins of the world. He is the one who provides the permanent answer.
Joel?
Yeah, can I just go back to that A part of the question? That was an excellent question. Questions about religion and science might divide them into two kinds. One are issues of, you know, what's the truth? And so we've been talking mostly about that with macroevolution and creation. But issues like cloning or the issues around stem cell research are now about so much what is the truth. I think very few people deny that there looks like something like cloning. But is it good? Or what are the good uses of these things and the like? And so that's another set of issues of which the kind of the moral political debate in our society tends to separate away. In other words, it's one thing whether you can do something, and it's another thing whether it's you should do it or it's good. But so many of our public debates are over whether you can. Terri Schiavo, the issue is whether you know she has or someone has the right to refuse her what's called medical treatment. Well, that's itself a problem. Or abortion, it's the public debate is over the woman's right to choose. Same-sex marriage, it's whether people can. And that dominates our public discourse, and Christians have to be aware about that dimension in our discussion about these things and be careful not to be sucked into just talking about whether we can or can't.
Do you guys not share my perspective that you're losing this battle?
No.
No.
Oh, I do.
You?
Yes.
You would agree with me that we are losing this battle?
Yes.
Do you want to elaborate?
Well, because our public discourse is largely dominated by whether we can or you have the right. And questions about what is good or what is right to do tend to be marginalized.
Are you worried about that? Gentlemen?
Well, I'll chime in. Sure. Look how many abortions there are in this country.
Because I don't think
I don't think it's an issue of win or lose, though. I mean, you're kind of putting this, you know, we're on one side or the other, and I don't know that
if you're an unborn baby, it's an issue about win or lose.
Who's going to win and who's going to lose?
Well, James Lamb says we're winning. A lot less abortions are occurring, and so it depends who you're talking to is whether we're...
Okay, so we have 3,500 abortions a day instead of 4,000. That's winning? I don't think so.
But progress is going our direction.
Why put it in a context of winning or losing? To me, those are rather subjective terms. And on what are the criteria you're going to use to determine that? Are you going to say, well, we have 500 less abortions a day. Does that mean we're winning? It would depend on if there's a pattern that persists in terms of this whole issue. And we start to see, and abortion clinics are being shut down. More people are becoming more informed on this issue.
I'm not sure I
don't tend to go that direction of winning or losing. I tend to talk about what Christian responsibility
well,
is.
Well, I'll go that direction because I think there's a train wreck coming. Now, you can just react to this because I think the...
But you're a skeptic.
I am? Okay, I am.
No, I'm just...
I think there's a train wreck coming, and I think it's coming on the stem cell issue, and I think it's coming for all of the reasons that we've just articulated here. You just got done saying that it is... wrong what we should do or shouldn't do to use we should not use embryonic stem cells for research as it pertains to disease and infirmity. You just made that clear statement. The world is coming your way. It is coming in your direction with all the force that it can muster, saying that yes, we should open up embryonic stem cell to research. And those two positions the trains have not quite collided yet, but they are storming toward one another in fury, and there's going to be a train wreck. Am I wrong?
No, I agree with Joel on this part, that within that context where he agrees with you, yes. I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, there's going to be...
So we're going to...
I believe the Congress,
stick our heads in the sand and,
because of money...
Money.
...is going to find some way to address the use of... I think it's going to be the spare, abandoned, homeless children in liquid nitrogen. And then that, of course, is going to create a slippery slope for more research.
Exactly.
Because you will always be creating. There are about 4,000 embryos created every day in 510 fertility clinics, and they're always frozen. But it is there. I mean, is it going to be a train wreck? Yeah. But I still believe that we're not going to be smashed.
Train wrecks are bad. All right, let me take some telephone calls here. We got some folks who are lined up. Let's talk to Herman. Herman, you're on the Bible study?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I think Pastor Baker's comment about the creationists are winning the debates on college campuses is very telling, that there is a crying need, certainly in the church, and certainly with Lutherans across the board, for solid, up-to-date apologetics to deal with these issues, that we were created in the image of God, ultimately redeemed in Jesus Christ, and we may be able to build space shuttles and computers, but that doesn't mean they're immune from tragic accidents or they can crash and not work. We cannot have science without an authoritative moral teleology there that just kind of demands
Herman,
anything.
What was that word you just used there? What was that?
Moral.
Moral teleology.
Well, no, see, now, Pastor Baker, he just jumped in there, so I didn't hear that. What was that word again?
Moral teleology.
Teleology.
That it has a purpose.
Do any of you brilliant men over there know what that means?
I think it means to have a purpose.
That's right.
Well, I know I learned at least one thing here today. Okay, Herman, thanks
for
the call.
You.
Anybody want to react to what Herman said there?
You know, train wrecks. We're theologians, so we look at things from God's point of view. There's never a time you're not in the midst of a train wreck. I think the genius of the Reformation said, you know, that a train wreck isn't just when people are being unrighteous, but also when they're being righteous and thinking thereby that they can win God over. That's as much of a train. All that we are is theologians.
How did we get from embryonic stem cell research to the Reformation?
It's your leadership.
We are in a world of train wrecks. That's why he had to come on Good Friday. Our task is to point out where is the train wreck occurring in our time.
At this particular point.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And some train
your
wrecks.
Your task as theologians is to do that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And then use the train wreck. Mm-hmm. That's occurring mm-hmm. for the purposes of bringing the message, the theological message, to bear.
So you embrace the train wreck.
We don't embrace it. We don't have a choice.
It's there.
It's there.
And I always look at these train wrecks, especially when we're teaching, and whether it's in the parish or at the seminary, look at the opportunity you mm-hmm. have here.
Look
for
what,
Christian witness.
Tremendous. With Shivo dying, you know, there's just tremendous opportunity. Easter Sunday, better mention her somehow, you know, in a sermon or Bible studies, because everybody's talking about them. Now, this is a train wreck from our point of view, but what an opportunity, mm-hmm. as Dr. Weiss says. Yeah. So we are theologians looking how God is permitting the various train wrecks to take place in order that the gospel of Jesus Christ might be approached.
Wow. So you guys come look at the train wreck, and then you say, well, here's an opportunity to put a positive spin on this. Somehow that's not resonating with me.
It's not really so much the positive spin, but the Christian witness.
There you go.
Yeah. Everybody's nodding. Explain that to me.
Well, in this case,
it goes like this. You just put your hand up and down.
In these cases, you know, we have an opportunity for to talk about our God. Creation, human life, its ultimate purpose, which is fellowship with God through Jesus Christ and the power of His Spirit. And we have a chance to engage people in a conversation that we might not ordinarily have the opportunity by way of discussing, well, Terry Schiavo or stem cell research.
Well, now, see, we've come right to the heart of the matter, because yesterday the national media was reporting, or we're reporting, that, I don't know if it's the New York Times, somebody took a poll, and the jury is in. 2-1, Americans believe that Terry Schiavo should be allowed to die. And you've got, you know, you're talking to people, all you confident
men. And half of those are Christians.
And half of those are Christians, thank mm-hmm. you very much.
But all of them think it's on the basis that she's in a vegetative state.
Yes.
Which is in untrue.
Oh, that's a whole, yeah.
But you can get 80% to agree.
But here's my point. you gentlemen are looking at the train wrecks that surround us because we live in a broken world, and you see it as an opportunity for a Christian witness. And we're talking to people today who are in that very same position, but they don't have the same confidence you have, because perhaps they don't have your training, perhaps they don't have your background. They're instead inundated with the news media and their survey that they took yesterday, 2-1 let or die. They're inundated with the public broadcast system, which tells us that evolution is a fact. They're inundated with Astronomy Magazine, which tells us that the universe is 17 billion years old, and they don't have the same kind of confidence that you have. They don't. They see the. This is the point. They see the opportunity. They're afraid to wade into it because there is so much misinformation or disinformation coming from the other side that you can just get your clock clean. And so they don't wade in.
This is ironic that the main executive for AM850 KFUO is speaking this way, because that's the very purpose of AM850 KFUO. There's a program on here called Issues Etc. that ought to really just be called Train Wrecks Etc. Because
that's exactly what we're talking about.
Our whole purpose in being a radio station is, and this is why. I didn't think I would say this, that the choice of your topic today has worked out better than I thought it would. because we're dealing with, we're
sit that down.
See,
get that
that's
down.
In a minute, please.
Yeah. I'm making note of that.
He has the power to fire me.
I know.
And so that, the old Adam motivation, mm-hmm. the new man motivation. No, seriously though, is that's what we're talking about. Good Friday is really an answer, to this issue. It's come out a number of times, but that's what we're involved with, to help the train wrecks that our people are experiencing and put the right light on.
Let's take another train wrecks in the Bible.
Let's take another caller here. Mike, thanks for holding on. You're on the Bible study.
Yes, hi. I didn't catch all of it, but I heard a little bit right before 11 o'clock. And I clicked on a couple websites people want to check out. I found some good information about how oil was farmed, et cetera, from a creationist point of view.
Okay. Give us a couple of them.
Sure. Well, the Institute for Creation Research is just icr.org.
Dr. Weiss is nodding. I guess that's a good one, I guess.
And answersingenesis.org. You'd have to type all of that in. Answersingenesis.org.
Okay.
That's the AIG organization. And I just clicked on oil formation, and there were some great articles that popped up. Be pretty interesting for people to take a look at. And I didn't hear all your discussion, but we are for stem cell research. It's just that we're for adult stem cell research. And I don't know if that came up during your discussion or not.
It did.
Okay.
And we're all for that, too.
Yeah.
But it may be that we're in the minority.
Well, unfortunately, that's true. There are zero treatments using embryonic stem cell research and over 80 treatments on different diseases using adult stem cell research. Unfortunately, the media doesn't tell us that.
All right, thanks for the call.
Sure.
We're going to go to break here in just a moment, but if all this is true, and I've heard you say this before, Dr. Weiss, that the future is in adult stem cell research. It is just almost limitless. Why all this pressure? What's driving the... Well, you can make money with adult stem cell research.
Yeah, but the money is not in the adult stem cell research or in the fetal stem cell research. It's in the fetus.
Why? Why is it there? I don't understand.
Well, I also think theologically it's pro-abortion. The pro-abortion people just love the embryonic because it gives justification to their point of view. And if we can... Everybody who's for adult is normally also against abortion, and so they see the two tied together.
So abortion is the issue.
Well, same thing with Terry Schiavo case, too.
Exactly.
The minute you scratch the end of death, you have to start scratching the beginning of life.
Let's talk about Terry Schiavo on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Bible study, hour number two of our roundtable.
Well...
The Ascension Bible Institute at Ascension Lutheran Church in St. Louis is starting its spring session April the 6th, and you're invited. Classes include In Defense of the Faith, Understanding the Lord's Prayer, and Digging Deep into the First Epistle of John. All classes begin at 7 p.m. For more information, contact Ascension Lutheran Church, 5347 Donovan, or on the web, www.ascensionstl.com, ascensionstl.com.
It's time to make decisions on your educational future. It's also high time to get your financial aid and application paperwork sent in, either electronically or by mail. Sending it in is the easy part. Filling out and completing the applications is the hard part. But you're in luck. For assistance in completing these forms, see your educational talent search counselor in your high school. Educational Talent Search is a free program to help you stay in school, graduate, and enter a college or technical school.
What is sepsis and why is it so deadly? Some answers on today's edition of Family Health. Here's Harold C. Thompson, D.O. of the Ohio University Department of Family Medicine.
Sepsis is a medical condition where an infection enters the bloodstream and spreads through the body. You can develop it following a minor illness, such as a urinary tract infection, or pick it up in a hospital after a medical procedure. According to the Mayo Clinic Women's Health Source, sepsis kills more than 120,000 Americans a year, some 40% of the people who develop it. In those with underlying illness, unfortunately, the death rate is about 60%. The good news is that while sepsis is becoming more common, the death rate is actually declining. This is because in recent years, we've learned better ways to treat it. Sepsis occurs when your body is overwhelmed by an infection of the bloodstream. Toxin-producing bacteria are the most common cause, but viruses and fungi are also sometimes the culprit. Infections in the lungs, bladder, and kidneys, skin, abdomen, and other organs can spread and lead to sepsis. Infections that develop after surgery can also lead to sepsis. Whatever the cause, sepsis can lead to widespread inflammation and sometimes to clotting in your blood vessels. The bacteria or other germs may spread throughout your body, a problem sometimes known as blood poisoning. One or more of your organs may fail, or your blood pressure can drop, depriving your organs of oxygen. We can't always prevent sepsis, but there are some things you can do to reduce your chance of developing it. One of the simplest is to wash your hands frequently, especially if you're in the hospital. Also, when you're hospitalized, make sure any catheters, drainage tubes, or bandages don't become wet, loose, or dirty. If they do, alert the medical staff and ask for a clean replacement. You also can help ward off sepsis by getting immunized against diseases that can weaken your immunity. If a case of sepsis does develop, the first thing doctors do is try to treat the underlying infection. Antibiotic medications are almost always a part of that treatment, and sometimes surgery is performed to drain the primary infection site. In some cases, corticosteroid drugs or an anti-infection medication called Protein C can be useful. Also, patients are often helped by supportive measures such as a breathing machine. Diagnosing sepsis is sometimes difficult because many conditions cause similar symptoms: fever, chills, a rapid heartbeat, and breathing problems. Fortunately, improved awareness and treatment methods are now the norm.
Family Health is a service of the College of Osteopathic Medicine and the Telecommunications Center at Ohio University, in cooperation with the American Osteopathic Association and the American College of Osteopathic Family Physicians.
On the next Joy, we've been cooling our jets for weeks now, just waiting to share with you the joyous music of Easter. Music by Bob, Hansel, John Rutter, and so much more. And now it's almost here. This is Ron Clem. We'll wait just a little while longer if you promise to join us this week for our Easter edition of Joy. Listen for Joy on the web at KFUO.org and Sunday afternoons at 4:05 on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back for our final half hour of this special two-hour Bible study roundtable. We have four guests today: Pastors Tom Baker and Chuck Spomer, Professors Joel Okamoto and Bob Weiss from Concordia Seminary, where we've asked the question as to whether or not science has eclipsed religion. I think we've more or less sort of answered that question. We're bearing down really on the core of the matter here, and, well, it's almost impossible for me to restate. I hope folks have been able to take in most of the 90 minutes we've done so far. We do have some people standing by on the telephone and like to try to see if I can get those folks here. So let's talk to Roy and Godfrey. Hi, Roy. You're on the Bible study. Hello, Roy. Might be gone. All right. Let's move over here and talk to Bill. Bill, you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your question or comment, sir?
Okay. I don't know if I can express this real well. I'm not very good at this. You know, it's strange that, you know, the people that believe in the evolution theory and that, they believe that things started from something, and as they evolve, they get better than that. And now, yet, if you look around the world today, we can see that everything, rather than getting better, is physically getting worse, and there's more problems, even though they do have a lot of new scientific discoveries that are helping people nowadays, Ned. But what is strange is I guess it's harder for them to look at the world and see the fact that everything is kind of getting worse, basically, than it is for them to think, well, something was created out of nothing by a creator. And they take something that wasn't too great in the first place, starting off, and they think it's getting better. And it's just kind of ridiculous way to think of this. And also, just wondering now in the Genesis account where it says that Adam named all the animals and everything, and God gave him the ability to do this, and he came up with all these names, these animals, and all this stuff. Which I don't know if the scientists nowadays are using some of the same terms that Adam used, but I wonder if they realize. Where in the world did the ability to come up with all these names did come from? Did that just evolve out of nothing, too?
Right.
I'll just hang up and listen to what they have to say.
Thanks for the call. Gentlemen, who wants to address that? Anybody?
The names?
Well, anything that Bill talked about.
Who knows whether the names that Adam gave the animals are the same names that we have now? Of course, what language did he speak? Who knows? The issue, I think,
serpent would be one.
Yeah, that would be true.
and Eve, woman.
Yeah. The problem of taxonomy, what you name things in the scientific world, is kind of interesting because taxonomy is based to a large extent upon some assumptions of evolutionists in terms of relationships, and it's kind of a circular argument again. Because you see some similarities, ostensibly similarities, you put things in the same classification, and you give them names which are scientific names which participate in that, and then you of course can claim that they're in the same class because they have the same name type thing. So,
here's a caller from Los Alamos, New Mexico. Hi, Bill. You're on the Bible study.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Okay, I would like to address this from a slightly different perspective. I could say a lot about actually where Chuck has been going has been my experience. I'm a PhD physicist, been so for over 20 years, and I could say a lot about that. But I want to address this from a different perspective, and I want to actually come back to Pastor Baker's radio program. When I first heard that at our convention we had agreed that we would say more about this from our pulpits, I had some thoughts on that and wrote down a lot about it. In any case, I think that we ought to be able to address this whole issue from the perspective of doubt. And that is, now I don't know if other people experience the kind of doubt that I do, especially in regard to this. It's something daily in my profession. And I think that Lauren Gospel can deal with this doubt. And I think that there's some value in being able to generally address our general doubts and use the specifics of talking about not merely evolution, because that really is a smaller issue from my perspective. It's more things like the age of the universe or even the topic relative to this discussion, whether science has eclipsed religion. In some sense, I think that has happened in all our minds. We at least have made these distinct epistemological separations in our minds. In any case, I think these engender doubts, and I think that they can be addressed from the pulpit, from the perspective of law and gospel.
Okay. I think you have crystallized the question. Let's see what our gentlemen have to say. Who wants to tackle that? Bob, you were nodding there.
Oh, I was pointing to Pastor Baker because of his law gospel. Because he's over there, just his lips are moving.
You guys are taking notes there.
Actually, just a comment, and then Tom. But I agree with that. This whole issue of doubt, you know, did God really say? But the question is, in listening to this physicist, you know, do the scientists really get it right? Kind of a thing. In some cases, yes. But from our viewpoint, in terms of a macroevolutionary perspective, no. In terms of all of the subjectivism, but I think the question about the age of the universe. And I get a lot of that, too. You know, how old's the universe? You know, I mean, I read an article in the journal Nature where some scientists are saying it has to be now at least 42 billion years old for all of this to have occurred. Yeah. Not any more than 12 to 20 billion years.
Darwin's
but now it has to be 42 billion. And then reading articles by evolutionists like Suzuki and so forth where they say, you know, this is all a big mistake. But that's the way it works. Tom?
Well, Bill not only picked me up at the airport, but having heard
Down there in New Mexico?
Yes, he did. That was one of my seminars. He had called me in, having listened to AM850 KFUO, and I had the privilege of speaking to a congregation that was at that point a mission congregation. And you know what's in Los Alamos. Mm-hmm. Is that great?
Yes.
And this man works
there. What's in Los Alamos?
This is the, gosh, how would I say this? The
Mecca?
It's the I can't think of it. Now you put
preachers
me on the spot. I can't think. I went brain dead.
For United States. It's a place.
It's a research.
Got me exactly. Maybe Bill can phone back and indicate, because he even took me on a tour it's around the outskirts. We weren't even allowed inside.
Atomic research.
Yeah, it's all atomic.
It's not atomic.
It's where originally they designed and built the atom bomb, and they keep it as the national.
Yeah,
but there's something else there.
Yeah, right, and that's where he works. He's on the line right now.
Okay.
Going to tell us. But the point I'm making is that this is where AM850 KFUO is dealing with these answers, because there's train wrecks going on out there, and by bringing me in and others like myself from a law gospel perspective. And I think, Dr. Weiss, I've taught a number of classes, but one of them was yours, mm-hmm. Where we brought in for a few days from a law gospel perspective how to deal with that, and I think you have continued with that point of view. What do we mean by law and gospel? I mean, how does that help us here? It helps us because theologically we can bring comfort in the midst of these train wrecks, and his point was really good, is that law and gospel doesn't answer these questions. But from a theological...
Therefore, it does not remove the doubt.
Yes, but see, you can be comforting in doubt because God's still in charge. Right. That's the point.
There's always the flux.
What was that? Go ahead.
There's always the flux. We always live in that flux.
That's right.
There's always doubt.
Yes. And that's where we're free to be doubters. We'll never get it right. The old man will get it right.
We're free to be doubters? Is that what you said?
Absolutely.
You got to understand what
Tom's
talking about.
Don't you know that you're
There's
not
a
supposed to be a
between...
double-minded man, the man who doubts?
No. Theologically, we have the truth. Theologically, the scriptures give us the truth about Jesus Christ and the way that God deals with the world in Jesus Christ. Scientifically, we are always in doubt. There is no such thing as anything which is scientifically the end statement.
I would think that would not be a very acceptable answer to a person who is a scientist or a person who is...
And they don't know their own history.
...in pursuit of scientific truth, because do they not experience a compulsion to overcome the doubt to...
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. The thing is, the problem is when you assume that if you have overcome this particular doubt that you have arrived at the quintessential answer.
Yeah,
yeah.
Everybody agrees.
Mm-hmm. Even among scientists.
Well, I think Bill was mentioning that. I mean,
that's his point.
That's his big point.
Joel?
Yeah. Although he also did mention, though, he thought that it comes down to this. We act as if science has eclipsed religion, and that we give such a priority to doubt that that which cannot be shown to be doubtless is always suspect. Mm-hmm. And so facts are that which everyone is supposed to accept. And if you don't, you're either, dumb or bad, or both. Mm-hmm. And beliefs are those which only some people hold, which you ought to respect, but not necessarily impose on anyone else. And science is the name for the game that deals with, again, facts. And religion is kind of the quintessential game that allegedly deals with belief.
See, it would be interesting from my viewpoint to hear Bill talk. Now, you have heard Bill talk as a Christian.
Yes.
How does he, out there as a layperson, deal with these doubts? Because it's obviously he doesn't have a lot of heartburn over some things we're saying here.
Right.
But as a PhD, a physicist down there, working in what he's doing, what is he doing? That's, whatever he's doing as a physicist, then it would be great to hear more from
him.
Here's
another caller. Let's talk to Mildred. Hi, Mildred. You're on the Bible study.
Yes, I think you got close to the subject I was going to go. I believe it basically comes down to unbelief on both sides of whatever a so-called disagreement is. But we have a marvelously great creator God, and he's God of math, and he's God of creation. And to the unbelief would be, well, if it's not, world is not 40 billion, then I won't believe. And the other argument is, if it wasn't done in 6 days, then I won't believe. So it always comes down to unbelief. And whether what you, what would I say, what you believe in the creation or stem cell research always comes down to faith in God and what would be what we would call the correct thing to do or the most correct, because some decisions we have to make in life are can be right and wrong at the same time.
All right. Let's see if we can get a reaction from our panel. Gentlemen, any comments? Taking notes? Writing theses? Pastor Spomer is writing. Dr.
Well,
Bob
you know,
is reading.
The question of most correct. Most correct for a believer to do. We have to recognize that we always act as sinners. We are at the same time sinners and saints. So when it comes to making a decision or taking a course of action that is based both upon what is the nature of our faith and our understanding of God as he reveals himself in Jesus Christ, and what is the nature of the world and the scientific understanding that we have of it and the conditions under which we live, we understand that when we make decisions, that we are making those decisions as sinners. And even though we may make a decision that we think is correct to make, we always still have to say, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Because somehow or another, because of the fallenness of the world, every decision that we make is going to result not only in perhaps good, but also it's going to result in some kind of injury or harm to somebody somewhere down the road. You can't even do right without somehow or another doing wrong, even within ourselves.
Here's another caller up in North County. Hi, Bill. You're on the Bible study.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Hi. I hope this ties in, and I don't speak faster than I'm thinking. The evolution and legality, this is a hard one. As we understand, or we think we understand, that law being a means unto to an end, that the witness of the law shows us that we are fallen, and yet evolution tells us that we aren't culpable or responsible for sin because it will evolve its own self out and repair itself, so to speak. And part of the total depravity of our thinking, and also the law is a witness to that fact when we understand the law's purpose in showing us that evolution is, in fact, a lie.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, we got some smart people listening to this program. Can somebody decipher that for me there? I saw your head going up and down, Pastor Spomer.
Well, it was right on.
It was right on.
Yeah.
How so? Explain it to me. I didn't understand.
You didn't understand that?
No. I need you to explain it to me.
What the law does is always accuse us of not understanding who God is and not trusting who God is and not believing who God is, and that shows itself in our pattern of thought, word, and deed. It also accuses us of being culpable for what it is that we are. We're not just culpable for what we do, responsible for what we do. We're also responsible for what we are. Evolution says you're not responsible for what you are. And if evolution says you're not responsible for what you are because eventually those things will be done away with through the evolutionary process, then then there is no particular responsibility for acting in self-interest all the time.
Therefore,
as
it is
evolution.
Attractive.
Yeah, it's tremendously attractive.
Joel?
Yeah. And to pick up on that, there's another way also to look at evolution as, well, a certain kind of theology. And that has to do with, you might say, the problem of evil and suffering. It helps to, you might say, get God off the hook for the kind of waste and the struggle and the violence that seems to be such a feature of the natural world, as well as the imperfections and the like. And in a sense, that's one of the appeals, I suppose, of an evolutionary argument that the imperfections give the sign of an apparent design. And but it is you know, theologically something that gets, you might say, God off the hook and works that way too.
I got 10 minutes, just
respond. Cause,
can you do it in less than 2 hours?
Yes.
Okay.
And if not, I can continue tonight at 6:05. Bill always really, he's really deeper. Every time I listen to him, I really appreciate it. Reminding me of a couple of things. On my program, the big thing I'm running with this week is that all false teaching only has one goal. We're going to come back to Good Friday, and that is to remove the necessity of the cross. Mm-hmm. That's the only goal that Satan has. And I'm now thinking that all false science also has that necessity. As he just pointed out, evolution removes the necessity of the cross. Yeah. That's just an excellent point. And then it suddenly hit me. Here's what we can tell our people. Just go out into the world and see if they can figure out what morality is. Now, they think they're pro-abortion, they're pro-homosexual, all this kind of thing. Obviously, we can't figure that out. They can't figure out the laws of God written on their heart. Well, how can they figure out the laws of science, therefore, written in the universe, just by examining it? Following what a pastor said there from an article in Lutheran Witness, scientists are sinners, and the knowledge they gain can cause them to become arrogant. For Adam and Eve, the enticement of the forbidden fruit was their belief that eating it would give them knowledge. The point I'd want to make then is that we're limited in really figuring out the natural laws, because we only can see what's in front of us, where we don't see the big picture that God has. And so therefore, once more, false science removes the necessity of the cross, and I think Bill really showed it well in regard to unbelief.
Let me see if I can get you to respond to this in the precious few minutes that remain. If I were to make the assertion that science has in fact eclipsed religion and that the game is over, game, set, and match, based on the Terry Schindler Schiavo experience. Now, I have not read everything or heard every radio broadcast or seen every television coverage, but the thing that appears to be missing to me in this debate, I have not heard one person assert that it is wrong for the state, or it is wrong for the judiciary, or it is wrong for the doctors to play God. The Terry Schindler Schiavo episode is, do we have the right to kill this woman? And we're having an argument as to whether or not that is correct. And I haven't heard anybody assert that, no, it's not correct, because only God is the one who is authorized to give and take life. That part of the argument, which I used to hear years ago, is gone. And apparently it can't even be raised, because somehow that would be a violation of the separation of church and state or some kind of. So it's over, gentlemen. It's over. Anybody want to take that on?
Well, the way I would respond is, the church already agrees, in the human sense, that we do have the right to kill a person. From a human understanding, because when we as Christians say that somebody is on extraordinary means, they have no more brain function, and the only thing that their heart is moving and their lungs is moving is because of mechanical means, we can take those away. From our point of view, we're allowing God to put that person to death. But in reality, from the human world, we're killing that person. Because they're alive now, and we're going to take that away. The thing is food and water in the same category as extraordinary means? Does she have consciousness? There are a lot of other questions. The thing is here's, from my point of view, the Christian point of view, we don't have the right to kill a person in murder, but we have the right to allow a person to die.
And you can only allow a person to die if they're dying.
Exactly.
And she's not dying.
And she's not dying. And that's why we're opposed to killing her. We really think this is killing her, not allowing
if
God.
If she dies, will we have broken through a barrier previously not broken before in our culture?
No.
No.
Joel, what did you?
Oh.
When did we...
Babies who are with Down syndrome are allowed to go into the section of a nursery and starve to death.
Yeah, follow today. Peter Singer.
Yeah.
Joel?
Yeah. Well, I thought I agree with what I've just was just said, but were you talking, though, asking about, talk about God and about our place vis-a-vis God, that this is no longer in the public discourse, it has no place? I mean, certainly that's true. Whether that means that the game is over or not, when I would agree that you say science has eclipsed religion. I would agree with that, but that doesn't mean that the game is over. But that we have to recognize this and actually be more explicit, not just when these situations come up, but in the way we present ourselves and talk about education of our children or all sorts of things, that we be more explicitly Christian in our explanations and witnesses, because the tendency is to just push that off to the side.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back to Bill's comment earlier that I heard him say, that he believes that there are places where some science has eclipsed religion. But I don't think it's every place, and that's a whole other issue for another time. I think that to be pessimistic here and say, well, game's over, science has eclipsed religion, of course we have to unpack these words. What do you mean by science and what do you mean by religion? I mean, I think what's happening here on Good Friday and Easter vigils on Saturday and certainly the Easter resurrection on Sunday, I personally would not be up front and say, yeah, science has eclipsed religion. And here we have Good Friday, and we have Easter resurrection. It's still here.
For somebody who has a law, gospel, or biblical perspective on the right to live, the right to life, and has watched this unfold and believes that it's morally and ethically and biblically wrong, and they have been praying for days and even weeks that Terri Schiavo will not be allowed to die, and if she dies and it feels like it's over, what do you have to say to that person?
I'd like to quote a very wise man, Professor Joel Okamoto, who said, God is God.
Okay, isn't that supposed to make me feel better?
Mm-hmm.
Explain that, Joel.
Well, actually, that may not make you feel better.
Now we're into feelings?
Uh-oh. Well, no, I mean, that could be the law.
Yeah.
It could be the gospel.
Yeah.
Could be the gospel.
But
got a minute left.
Yeah. No, we have to act, though, as if... the one true God, the God and Father of Jesus of Nazareth, is indeed the creator and sustainer of all things, and the one that with whom we'll have to deal with ultimately. Even if we've died, he'll raise from the dead and call us to account. And that's the way things are. And that's the ultimate end we'll reach, and that our only hope lies in being those who have been redeemed and incorporated into the Lord Jesus Christ.
If there was anybody who said, game, set, match, it's over, it was the disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane after they saw Good Friday occur. It's never game, set, match, because there's always Easter.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. I think it was a stimulating conversation. I think we had just the right mix of guys here. Pastors Tom Baker and Chuck Spomer and Professors Joel Okamoto and Bob Weiss. And we have been discussing and hashing around the question, has science eclipsed religion? And I suppose now... our listeners will go forth and answer that question for themselves. You gentlemen are very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's our Bible Study Roundtable. Thanks for listening.
Listen to Chuck Rathert and guest Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is... Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a cassette copy of the Bible Study, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of the Jubilee Network.